Thank you for coming today. I've spent most of my career at BP, a big public company, and we did not communicate as much as Talen does to our investors, certainly not the folks who held our debt. We like to communicate. We communicate a lot. We want to continue to do that. You know, we kind of view this as a partnership, and we want to continue doing what we're doing. So I was reflecting on the conversations. They sort of started a couple of years ago when we said, hey, look, we're going to take this company and improve it, and we're going to generate $125 million of cumulative cost savings over the first 2 years. And many of you out there looked at us like, who are you two guys? Can't happen. This has already been done. And then we said, no, it's not going to be 125. And you said, aha. We said, it's going to be 300. And then we said, that was even worse. Like, that can't happen. And then we said 475. And then we said 600. And what you'll see today is we actually exceeded that over the two-year cumulative 17 and 18 period in terms of rebasing this company. But the conversation shifted about a year ago when this thing called capital allocation started showing up and the D word showed up. And all of a sudden that became the nature of the conversation. Yeah, we trust you, management. You'll do what you promise. But what is about capital allocation? So we're going to talk about that a bit today too. Then it moved a little bit further for some of you. Hey, what about your assets? Now, I think that's pretty cool that now you're asking about assets, not whether we can do stuff or not, not whether capital allocation is still out there, but what about the assets? So we're going to address a little bit of that. I had the opportunity to read all of our peer groups' presentations. It's confusing to me. I'm sure it's confusing to other folks. But I think we'll surprise you with the asset base, its quality, what it can do, and so forth, particularly around ESG. I mean, the punchline on ESG is if you look at one of our competitors who has a, quote, modern all-gas fleet, which is twice as good on their chart as any competitor in the IPP space. We're not on it because we don't publish our data. They are twice as good in terms of CO2 emissions per megawatt produced. If we were on that chart, we'd be twice as good as those guys too, and right behind this company. So it's a piece of data that I think many of you may be surprised as we start to show you some information that we haven't shown you before. So we want to communicate. To me, there are four things I'd like to do today. One is make it clear to you that we heard you, okay? Two is I want to lay out the shape of the firm over the next few years. Where are we heading? What are we going to try to do? And so forth and so on. Three is we like our assets, love our assets. We really love our people. So today, what I want to do is speak less and have more people participate. There are people who will not participate in the presentations today who will be in the audience around lunch. Grab them. We're unrehearsed. There's not like some big coaching session going on prior. Grab them. See what they think. What are they saying? But there was a lot of them, about 20 folks here that you should meet. I am thrilled with what the team we put together, the quality of the people we've recruited, and I hope you'll feel the same way as you get to know more of them. And then finally, and most importantly, people need to leave here with a clear understanding that Riverstone and Talen speak with one voice. I really think we have a spectacular sponsor who has a lot of deep understanding of this industry. Well, I want to make sure that's going to happen. So here's how we're going to do it. Alex is going to come in behind me and sort of dive in a little deeper on performance. But then we're going to move into Stacy, who's going to take us through capital allocation discussion. And then Brad Berryman will talk about Susquehanna and operational excellence. Brad's our chief nuclear officer, a remarkable young man, and I think you'll be impressed what he's got to tell us. We'll have a couple of panels after a break, going diving in a little bit deeper on some of the subject matter. And then Carl Williams will finish it up with equity owner, the sponsor's position, and how they think about this company and where it's heading, okay? So that's sort of the day that we're going to go through today, all right? So let's go to the first slide. I thought since we're going to be in a conversation for a long time, we should start from the beginning. And I was thinking about this slide. This is basically a share price slide of Talen. Started in 2015, June 2015, $20 a share. Carl, you remember how exciting all that was. What a brilliant idea. Here's Talen, which is an amalgamation of PPL's merchant fleet and a bunch of assets that Riverstone had pulled together over a decade, combining to get scale and going public under a leadership team who had track record and credibility with you guys in the markets. So we were quite excited. I will tell you, as a 35% shareholder and somebody on the board, we had very limited ability to stop things. We could not chair committees. We could not. There was all sorts of things in the shareholder agreement that made it difficult for us to impose what you would expect us to be able to impose. I titled this thing The Accidental Activist because I will tell you, I was with Riverstone for 10 years. But Carl and I started together. Riverstone has never, ever done a take private, ever. It has never done what we did here. It didn't want to do it. Carl reminds me, I used the phrase like, over my dead body, should we do this? But we had no choice, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But it is unprecedented. It has not happened since, and nor did it happen before this particular situation. And it was a tough, tough decision for Riverstone to make at the time. So here we are, first line, $20 a share. We come out, big, nice big market cap. And then literally a month later, Talen announces the MachGen acquisition. Many of you know what MachGen is, but it's interesting. I went back and looked at the presentation my predecessor made at the Barclays conference in September, explaining why they did the MachGen acquisition. Their strategy was simple. We're really good at originating deals. We're going to continue on that track record. Two, we're going to do accretive things. That's important to us. And three, we're not a big fan of the fleet necessarily. Nuclear is kind of a problem. We've got some coal. We'd like to diversify more into gas. And then you go do MachGen. So the accretive bit, yep, good origination, although that thing was for sale for a decade, so I'm not sure it counts for origination. Pay 20 times EBITDA when the company's trading at 3 times less than that, in other words, 7 times. Absolutely unaccretive, $1.2 billion out. We did not stop them as a board member. We could not and did not stop them. First time, first decision. We move on, and I put Brunner on here. We closed the acquisition. Of course, the market now understands what's going on. It's beginning to dive, and as was the sector. But Talen is outperforming to the downside on share price depreciation. I put Brunner on here because Brunner was this first gas to a coal to gas conversion plant, which is now semi-operational today. In fact, it's coming back on today. It has been the single most problematic plant we've had for a couple of reasons. One, instead of being done and closed out in December 2016, it is being closed out now, 2 years later. When it was put in, all the guys in the plant thought, we're going to run a gas plant. We're not going to run coal anymore. So the option to switch back and forth became very difficult because none of the equipment was maintained the way it should have been. We've been catching up since then. So this whole notion of saying stuff and not executing began to get more and more worrisome. But what broke the camel's back was a second acquisition proposed. And the second acquisition was the scale of Talen. It would have doubled everything about Talen. Its size, its debt load, all on the basis of gas prices going up. This management team, prior to us going private, had a fundamental belief that natural gas prices were going to go up. Riverstone, if it does one thing, invest a heck of a lot in oil and gas. I am an oil and gas guy. I ran BP's onshore U.S. business. We had companies in the Marcellus, companies in the Permian. We knew costs were going down, it was ubiquitous, and there was no way, unless something really crazy happened, natural gas was going to go the other direction. At that point, Mr. Williams walked in and said, we need to get out of this thing or buy it. And I was voting for getting out of this thing. And the conversation started. We went to the board, said, guys, take us out of here. We're finished. This isn't working. We're going to block everything. Can't really do that. And we did. For a number of reasons, it ended up flipping. And we ended up buying the company. Again, at a price that I wasn't too thrilled about, given where we were. But we did it. At that point, Alex joined. And we honestly did not know what we had inherited here. Okay. So that's how this started. Just if you can leave one thing, this is not about some clever, neat piece of Cirque du Soleil move that Riverstone had foreseen and forethought and planned. It is not. This was an intervention to save the equity and, frankly, a lot of the debt capital on this balance sheet. And I firmly believe, had we not done it, given what's happened in the markets, this company, we'd be in a different situation right now. I wouldn't be here. You guys might be here, but this would be an equity meeting, not a debt meeting. So that's what happened. Now, meanwhile, the rest of the planet is moving forward. And we have the IPP sector now getting interesting again. Activists start showing up, Elliott and Wilder and so forth. And we plotted NRG's performance since the time, December 2016, up to today. Pretty amazing, 244% share price appreciation. They have saved $650 million cumulatively over the 2 year period. We on the bottom, being roughly half the size of NRG, have saved $650 million also. So when you look at this thing, you sit there and go, my gosh, there is a powerful equity story here, and that's what we're going for. This company is all about maximizing the value of the firm. The equity story here is pretty powerful, and we have performed and delivered a lot. But I will also tell you, we are not great yet. We're good, getting better, but we have so much to do operationally, commercially, and so forth. We are not where we need to be yet, where I'd like to see us there. We have pieces of it, but not all of it yet. We'll talk a bit more about that. I like to kind of put things in four buckets. First is, again, we want to maximize enterprise value, right? Now we understand what we've got the synergies in place. What can we do with this thing? We do believe the word performance has a simple definition. When we tell you something, we will do it. Everybody in this firm understands that. We have a language of aspiration. We want to do cool things that are pretty above and beyond, but we don't confuse that with the language of business. Performance to you, when we tell you things, is about the language of business. It will be delivered. We did it in 17 and 18, and I think we'll do it for the foreseeable future. Our operating cost base has proven durable. We took $300 million out in 2017. People said, oh my God, are you stripping this, blah, 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 blah. We did it again in 2018 with better performance, safety, and reliability than we've ever had. So this is the sort of thing that we're doing. We rebased the firm. We'll explain how we did it. We'll give you a little bit more detail and why there's more to do. Susquehanna moved to first quartile on unit cost structure. Again, no one believed that was possible, including the previous management. When I took over the company, we were recruiting a new vice president of operations who, when I met, said, don't do that because he's going to let go the next day. And we hired Brad. And then secondly, we were in conversations with Exelon to take over operations at Susquehanna on a sharing deal. They would create synergies, we'd share it. My response to Exelon, who I have great respect for, was, let me figure this out ourselves first, and then we'll come back and talk to you. This synergies they were going to provide versus what we've actually achieved is one-third of what this group has done, and more to come. So we made the right call here. But again, many people doubted you could take a nuclear power plant at this level. Just for background, I'm a nuclear engineer. I have a master's degree in nuclear engineering. It's kind of tribal. The minute you tell somebody that in a plant, it changes the conversation. Obviously, safety is paramount, but that plant is designed to be one of the best in the world. And I personally will be disappointed, as will the team, if it is not. Measured by lowest cost, full dispatch cost in the nation. Capital, fuel, O&M. And we're well on the way, and Brad and the team will show you that. The other thing that's happened is volatility showed up. Instead of, you know, the world being nice and flat, we've seen now a couple of years of volatility, both in ERCOT and PJM. Why is that important to us? Because every one of you and I learned about basic economics. This is easy. You have a curve. The lowest cost guy goes first. You keep on getting power until you hit the demand side. And that's the price setter. That's true on what I call the dispatch mode. And our job has been, how do we take our fleet and keep moving it up the curve? How do we get lower and lower dispatch costs so we can participate more in those markets? And we've done that across the fleet. We'll show you some data to prove that. But when volatility, the curve inverts. And what happens is, price of gas in PJM in particular, last year goes to $20, and the last thing you do is burn it in a turbine. That needs to go to heat. So our gas that we bought to run in our brand new big turbines, gas turbines, were bypassing the plants, the gas plants, going to heat, and we were cranking up coal, oil, and everything else we had. The curve inverts in volatility, and John Norling will talk a bit about how that works. This portfolio is unique in that it can handle all these different pieces. What we're not good at doing yet is capturing it all. We got to figure out how to deal with this volatility in a different way. And we'll talk about how we're beefing up the team to do that. Similarly with ERCOT, seeing huge numbers, reserve margins are coming off, and we'll talk a bit more about that later. On ESG, I'm going to come back to that with a couple of slides later. On portfolio, again, we've improved dispatch costs. I won't go through that. Built for all seasons. What people don't realize is two of our biggest parts of our fleet, both in ERCOT and in Montour, are sitting in the heart of excess gas supply that can't get out. If you're a Permian oil producer, two questions. What's the price of oil going to be? Because God darn it, if it's too low, I'm dead. But if it isn't too low, what do I do about natural gas? How do I get it out of here? It's the constraining factor. And in the Marcellus, it's a tale of two cities. If you happen to be around Leidy, you're in trouble. Atlantic Sunrise is there now. There's tons of Utica and Marcellus available gas. It will fill up, and you will be stuck again. We happen to have plants sitting right on top of those two basins. And we think that natural short we have is an interesting way to think about it. I think about Talon's fleet and PJM as the Constitution pipeline. With the right commercial deal, with the right producers, we can take away the equivalent of Constitution through our fleet. But the right deal hasn't happened yet. Montour, we talked about the gas conversion. It is ready to go. Right away is bought. Engineering is done. We're not doing it this year because I want to watch cash flow. It's my thing to do, given where we are from a market perspective. But we've been using that position to renegotiate everything. We renegotiated our rail contracts this year, our coal contracts. This is no kidding. And sitting across from these guys, and when I told them we're going to gas, their question back was the right one. What will it take to stop you? Now, they didn't get there, but they got close enough to defer it. And we're seeing the benefit without spending a dollar, a material improvement, just by the ability to convert that asset. Real estate and access to the grid. This is something we've never talked about, but you know, those of you who follow renewables in this space are hearing from everybody, my God, the cost of wind, pretty static, but the cost of solar is going to zero, really low, other than irreducible cost of installation. If that's true, which I have no reason to believe Moore's Law isn't going to continue on solar, then the short's not going to be sun. The short's going to be real estate, access to the grid. Two things Talon is blessed with. We've inventoried our entire fleet, our entire portfolio of real estate and access to the grid. And you're going to start to see us dip our toe on looking at what we do around renewables. I will tell you, I think this is true. I haven't done the math myself, but you're welcome to challenge it. There is no team in the country that is in an IPP space that has invested more money in renewables than Carl Williams and myself, who raised the largest renewable energy fund ever in private equity, $3.5 billion. Alex Hernandez, who was the CFO of TERP. I ran BP's renewable business, both wind and solar we manufactured. We have a hell of a lot of renewable experience, and the guy who did most of the work at NRG is with us. So we will do this at the right time and the right way, but it's an asset that's sitting out there that may or may not become very valuable. We'll talk more about it next year as we start to experiment. And then finally, as you know, when we took this company over, the first thing we did is put a moratorium on any inorganic growth. To us, the greatest acquisition we could have made, we already did, buy Talen and get it fixed. And we're well on our way to do that. We're now ready to take the next steps. You're not going to hear me saying, I strategically believe that the future is X. What I strategically believe is you buy something at a good price, low cost, you make it better, that's strategic. Not a bet on gas prices, not a bet on other bets. So we think there's going to be lots of opportunities, especially as the nation, as PJM goes through its troughs the next couple of years, to do some really interesting things. And we think we have the operational capability to really add a lot of value to fleets that we see out there. People think about innovation technically. This is not the most innovative nation on the planet. I mean, industry. Are we looking at AI? Yes, on the fringes. Are we looking at machine learning? Yes. Do we have quants? Yes. John will talk a bit about that. But this innovation is about the way we think and our people. The first is, we had a great outcome in the last auction in PJM. Not only was the price higher than everybody thought, we cleared more megawatts than Talen had ever cleared before because we bid fundamentally differently. We used different products, different approach, a very different way to do it, and it paid off. And that was a pretty cool piece of innovation. The Sierra Club, one of the wonderful stories I like to tell is when I took this job, one of the first letters I got was from congratulations, was from the Sierra Club. It said, Mr. Alexander, congratulations on your new role. Let us come visit to help you shut everything down. I mean, I'm kind of saying how it was, but that was sort of the beginning. Then they went and threatened to sue us. Now, most people will sit there and, you know, dealing with the Sierra Club is, you know, you just don't. Here you go, you lawyer up and go. A year later, thanks to the work of Deborah Raggio, who you'll see on one of the panels, we essentially agreed a deal with them that allows us to preserve the operation at Brunner Island for the next decade. Unprecedented. Unprecedented. And over a beer, we'll explain how that happened. MachGen, 35 forbearances. Here are the keys. This thing was negative cash flow from the day we got it. We turned it back to the bank. Bank didn't want to do that. And we ended up restructuring MachGen. Alex will take you through that. But we're thrilled to have restructured MachGen, got out of Harquahala, which was a money loser, and now have two wonderful assets in the Northeast United States for literally nothing. Retail. People like this thing called Gen Tailors. I'm a lot older than everybody in the room. I'll tell you a couple things. When any cool name shows up like Gen Taylor, short it. It is eventually going to bust, but who knows? Two is, we have retail. We sold our residential retail. Our residential retail business was a disaster. It swung negative and positive over the years. It was managed with poor systems, and the risks were unacceptable to this company. You see these guys blow up every once in a while? Why do they do that? Because residential retail demand goes up at the worst possible time. When it's cold as hell, power prices are through the roof, and you're out there buying a cover, but you've sold a fixed price to a customer. We got out of all that business. What we have is C&I, commercial industrial. A plant doesn't care if it's cold out. A school doesn't care if it's cold out. Commercial industrial demand is much flatter. So right now we have 10,000 meters. We move roughly 20% of our power through the retail channel. It's just beginning. We retool the team. There is nobody on that team in the management system other than one individual that was with Talen before that's on it now. They've been picked off from the best and the brightest. And to me, this is our technology play. We're working it. We're going to do this cost effectively and efficiently. And hopefully, if it works, we will come back and talk to you guys next year and tell you about our progress here. But please, don't believe we don't have a retail presence. We do. Those of you in Texas will start to see it. Those of you in PJM in the Northeast will start to see it too, more visibly. We're just being slow because we want to underpin it with good systems. And then finally, the labor contract. Another thing you couldn't do, Ryan Price will talk to us later. Ryan's our head of human resources. He'll talk a bit about the labor piece. We used to have like warm, fuzzy HR folks. Now it's Ryan. You got a problem, go talk to Ryan. Ryan was a scholar athlete at Texas A&M. That's the deal. He also came from the airline industry, which is no easy task, United in particular, and knows a lot about unions. This is one contract that's been around for 85 years. The way it works is you start with the first contract, then you do negotiate the second one 3 years later, and you go as a union, hey, I like these four more things. Okay, I like these four more things. This went on for 85 years to the point we have somewhere between 5,000 and 10,000 MAs. These are rules on how you work, how you change light bulbs, how you go ahead and sweep up, who can do what. 5,000 plus of these MAs sitting out there, a defined benefit plan that left unchecked would essentially dwarf the company. That's gone. The MAs are gone. The defined benefit plan's gone. Well, no one missed a beat. The company performed through that. There were no work stoppages, no issues. I'm telling you, you would have shorted that bet a year ago. They could not do it, and we did it. And I think we have a pretty good team now in place. And our union representatives are just like the rest of us. They're great folks. They work with us. They understand what we're doing. And Ryan will take you through how we got there. Finally, on the balance sheet, we have, like I said, a strong aligned equity sponsor with deep industry expertise. I think Carl will talk more about that, and you'll get a better sense of that yourself directly. Maturities, let Alex and Stacy talk about. We have allocated about balanced across debt and return of equity to the sponsor. Again, we'll show you the math. That may surprise some folks, but we'll show you the math. And then we're going to give you some clarity about where we're heading forward on capital allocation. Okay? So just a couple of minutes on ESG, real quickly. So here's what I'll tell you. Be careful. This is a new set of criteria that you're being asked to begin to contemplate now. I would just suggest you be careful on how you look at it. This is like a field day for management to come up with new ways to talk about ESG. One guy who happens to have a modern gas fleet compares their fleet on tons of CO2 per megawatt hour of production against a mythical plant that is some part coal, some part oil, and some part a normal gas plant, kind of combined into this thing. And it's twice as good as that thing. That thing doesn't exist, but it is twice as good. Another guy who has terrible data, according to the first guy, comes back and says, no, the right measure is pounds of CO2 per dollar of revenue. That's a publicly traded company you guys follow. That's an interesting one. So if I go out and trade another $1 billion of revenue, I can change the denominator. That's not a good way either. When we talk to you about CO2 and carbon, it's going to be, what are we putting in the atmosphere? Pounds. That's it. By the way, on the metric of pounds per megawatt hour, we're right behind the best in class. They're at about 860, we're about 950, and the other guys are 1.5, 1,500, okay? We're right there, and we're getting better. You can see this on the left. Emissions have fallen from 2010 by 40%, and it'll drop another 20% going forward in the next 3 or 4 years. To me, this is a force for good argument. Backing companies like us who are changing and shifting is an important thing, making sure the capital is coming in to allow us to do the mentor conversions, to allow us to do things that reduce carbon, if you're worried about it, if it's something you want to do. But to me, it's not credible to say, hey, you have coal, we're not investing in you. I will challenge any other company that put that track record of CO2 reductions in this industry and what we're going to do in the future against this. And if you want to help us get there, we're the guys to invest with, in my view. The other thing is, the same people who talk about carbon want to kill the nuclear plants. While a gas plant is better than a coal plant by a factor of 50%, it is infinitely worse than a nuclear plant. Every time you shut a nuke down and replace it with a gas plant, you got half a coal plant. So my view is, those guys who are anti-zero emission credits, who don't want to pay for the attribute, which Deborah will talk about, are pro-carbon. You cannot stand in both places. You can't say, I'm cleaner than he is. Oh, by the way, the cleanest source of fuel, shut it down. Or I believe in free markets, but none of those free market guys who have renewable energy credits and ITCs give them back to the federal government. Those are subsidies. Those are non-free market actions, but they take them. So this is a weird place. From our perspective, we like our nuke. It is efficient, it is zero emissions, and if you read any study about the future, a renewable world needs nuclear baseload and batteries, the big three. Latter not available yet. And then finally, for me, I just want to talk about safety and where we are in NOVs, things that we've gone wrong. You can see with all the change and everything that's going on, we're still safe and we're getting better on mishaps that require some sort of innovation. And it's really around a culture of no harm. We want to be a great company. The definition of a great company is no harm to people, no harm to the environment. We're not there yet. So I'll leave you with this. I'll turn it over to Alex in a second. We're getting better. We're getting better everywhere, but we have a long way to go. We still have a lot of potential to improve performance, to grow and learn about our fleet, what we can do. We're not done, and you'll start to see pieces of this as we lay it out. And with that, I'll turn it over to my colleague, Alex.